Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Pi Radio, Manchester's number one youth-led station. My name's Gerns, this is Mango Masala. I'm here with Halima and Simran.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
And let me just give you a little bit of an insight as to what's been happening for the past 15 minutes, I want to say. Simran is not in the studio with us, and we only have one pair of headphones. So I was running around trying to find the adapter, couldn't find it, and now we're basically, me and Halima are sharing a pair of headphones in order to hear beloved Simran.
As if it couldn't get any more intimate, Carlos is literally like sat on my lap every episode. Mm. Often we have to share a mic. But listen, guys, if this does not prove our dedication to you and the show, I don't know what will. Mm. Through it all, we still turn up and we still put banging episodes out, so.
Any thoughts, Simran?
Oh, I expected nothing less. But
I genuinely can hear.
Okay, like, just keep it
To see you guys all cozy, keeping warm.
Well, that's another thing, isn't it? Do you want to go on your
So I came to the studio like a few minutes, like 5-7 minutes early. And instead of coming up, I stayed in my car with the heating on full blast because it is freezing outside. As in, like, my body is covered in goosebumps. I'm shivering.
I will have you know that it's actually above 4 degrees. Oh, so actually, technically, it's not freezing.
Okay, but you know what I'm saying. Like, it's extremely cold. And I, like, kind of begrudgingly get out of my car, make my way up. Because obviously, as we've spoken before on the show, Vernon Mill is notoriously cold. Like, there's no insulation. There's not heating here. In the summer also, there's not, like, air conditioning. So when it's hot, it's hot. When it's cold, it's cold. Anyways, I come up and to my absolute shock horror, Carlos is in the studio in a vest.
And shorts.
And shorts.
Yeah.
In a vest and shorts. I don't know. How warm-blooded can you be? I don't get it. Like, even warm people would be cold in this temperature.
I recognize that it is cold, right? That's why I wore a jacket on the way here. And then when I get here, I walk up the 4 flights of stairs. I get to the top and I'm like, no, like, I'm getting all hot now. And then when I start setting everything up, I'm getting all flustered. Finding out that the bloody microphone thing isn't here, like...
No, even then, like, I could be running a marathon and I would still be cold. But to be fair, I'm very anemic, so I don't cold just doesn't leave my body. I can't warm up by myself. But yeah, I don't know. For me, this is just insanity, honestly. Carlos is just hot. You're like my sister. My sister's just hot all the time. Even in the winter, she sleeps with the windows open. I don't get it.
It's good ventilation.
It's good for your lungs.
Yeah. That's how a lot of people get ill in the wintertime, is because they don't open their windows.
I was going to say, I have noticed that there was a period of time where I kept opening my windows and, like, sleeping through the night, and I was getting ill less in that period. Because in the Scandinavian countries, they have that thing, don't they, where they put their, when their kids go to sleep, like babies, when they sleep, they leave them in their, like, pushchair outside. Do you not know that?
No.
It's a huge thing.
Yeah, I had a Bulgarian flatmate in uni, and he said that when he was a baby, it's a very normal thing that you wrap the kid up a lot and you, like, put them in warm clothing and in, like, a blanket and stuff, and then you leave their cot and you let them have their afternoon nap outside in the snow.
Yeah. In Scandinavia, it's a huge thing.
It builds their immune system.
They nap in their pushchairs, like, outside.
How are you having a go at me for wearing, like, a vest and shorts in, like, not even freezing weather, yet you're like, oh, yeah, that's fine?
No, I don't think it's fine. I think it's crazy. But obviously, science has shown that I think it improves their immunity and their blood circulation.
If you did that in the UK, you'd get done for, like, child abuse.
Yeah,
like,
you would. Oh, yeah, you would.
No.
You would.
What do you mean?
If you wrapped up your baby and left it outside in cold British weather, I'm pretty sure people... Yeah, but that's what I mean. I feel like in the UK, people are like, literally, what is going on?
Oh, yeah. But I don't think it's cold enough here to warrant that. You'd just be a weirdo.
Yeah.
Yeah, but whatever it is, I'm just not for it. I'm not for it. I don't like cold. And Carlos,
breathing cold air into your lungs.
I'm sat here in a long sleep t-shirt and I'm still freezing and Carlos is in a vest and shorts. I just don't get it.
Simran's just said breathing cold air into your lungs stops you getting sick.
Does it really?
Yeah,
because I've been going on walks in the cold, like in the evening and stuff, and then if I've been breathing through my nose, holding it in and then breathing it out through my nose so it stays in my lungs, and low-key I've not gotten sick this winter.
Is that what you've been doing? What kind of home remedy is that?
Yeah.
Wow, Simran, this is real adulthood. Like, only when you're post 25 do you be doing this stuff.
Real adulthood or real unemployedness?
Maybe a mix of both. Only someone 25 plus would actually be that in tune with their health to do something like that. But I'm impressed. I might try it.
Yeah.
You should. It actually helps.
Anyway, like I was saying to Halima, I'm just trying to bring a bit of Miami back here, personally.
How was Miami?
You look like someone that's just come back from Miami.
I feel like I look like someone
a GTA character.
That actually is from Miami. I like that in mind as well. It is so funny every time I go there. How I can tell whenever I get in a taxi, like, I don't think people necessarily realize that I'm not from around here, especially when my name is also Carlos. Yes, so immediately
they must think you're one of them.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying. I don't think they realize that I'm not from around there. So they see the name Carlos. They see that obviously I look like relatively Hispanic as well. Yeah. So I feel like they just put two and two together and are like, well, and literally so many times they just start speaking Spanish to me. Really? And I'm like, I haven't done Spanish since year 11 GCSE.
Little British Indian boy, like, sorry, no hablo español.
No. Honestly, most of the time I just nod along and play, yeah. But honestly, I think they're a lot better actually. In Miami, at least, than here. Like, they won't start randomly chatting to you. They will just, like, you know what I mean? When you get in a taxi, you just don't want to speak to people. They will just, like, not speak to you.
Question. When you guys go traveling, do people recognize your accents as the Manchester accent, or is it just like a British accent or a different accent altogether?
Sometimes, I think. For me, it depends. So some people can tell sometimes I've got an accent, but they'll be like, oh, yeah, I could tell, like, your accent's a bit northern or it's a bit different, or they might not necessarily pinpoint Manchester, though.
But I feel like you have a more distinctively Manchester accent than I do.
I have a cuzzy accent.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing. Maybe
like, it's just different.
They're expecting Oasis and they get Wormsley Road.
Yeah, exactly.
With me not, because I did see some of my uncle's friends when I was there, and I don't think they necessarily clocked on that it was Manchester. So
I was gonna say America in particular, I feel like they wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah like I think that when they think about you know how Americans, quite a lot of One Direction's fan base was like America as well, like they actually broke America. And when you think about it, One Direction actually are a non-southern band. Like, the furthest south they go, is Midlands.
Yeah.
I don't think that people would.
Where's Louis Tomlinson from?
He's from Doncaster.
Where's Harry Styles from?
Cheshire.
So
my physics teacher taught him in high school.
Niles Island, obviously. Yeah. Harry Styles, Cheshire, Zayn Bradford.
Liam's Wolverhampton.
Literally, yeah. Liam's the furthest south. Yeah. Yes, someone's pointing to himself because, like, I was born there. that's the one time you're claiming it. But yeah, so basically what my point is, I think a lot of Americans would look at One Direction and be like, oh my gosh, the British accent. But then none of them have the Queen's English British accent.
I have something to say about that, guys. I don't know if have I said it before about the reverse classism thing?
Go on.
Well, I feel like I have reverse classism. You know how, like, a lot of southern people or upper class people show a lot of classism towards, like, northern accents because they kind of associate it with being lowly and uneducated and things like that and informal. I have the reverse classism where I cannot stand received pronunciation. Mm. I hate it. I don't think you guys understand. It physically makes me cringe. Like, when I'm watching TikToks, and there's a few TikTok creators who I really enjoy their content, I have to sometimes watch them, like, with the volume down and watch the subtitles, because the received pronunciation, like the posh accent, grates me. Mm. Like, it genuinely makes my eyes roll, but I hate it so much. It makes me cringe.
I feel like I actually share that sentiment, because growing up, the main influence of that kind of speaking, that Zoella. Pronunciation. No, actually wasn't Zoella. It was whenever I would hear episodes of Made in Chelsea. I'd hear the adverts for it, because I'd never watch them. I'd hear the adverts for it. I'd be like, I hate this. Like, yeah. Like, I actually can't. Like, and people would ask me, oh, what's your least favourite accent? I'd be like, Made in Chelsea. I can't stand it.
Like, I hate it so much. I hate it.
I think
hate
because
it.
Obviously with a show like that as well, a lot of the stuff is quite pretentious, and, like, they're obviously living the high life in
but,
London.
But then so. I feel like, because I do watch Made in Chelsea sometimes, so like with that, I feel like I can, there's almost like a, because I'm watching a show, so it's kind of like characters with a put on accent. I hate it more when it's like everyday regular people, you know, that you come across or like on TikTok, like just like normal. Like, I feel like when you're watching a show, there's a kind of degree of suspension of disbelief where you're like, okay, whatever, these people aren't really real. Even though it is a real accent, but you can kind of just like dissociate.
Yeah.
But when it's like normal, regular people, I'm like, oh, why are you talking like that? I can't stand it. I really can't stand it.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Simran, as being the next door neighbour of these people?
I kind of think if I sound like that.
No.
You just have like a general southern accent, but not, it's not like received posh like pronunciation, you know?
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I have been told I sound posh quite a lot recently, though.
But I think a lot of people would associate someone who's southern and well-spoken to just automatically be posh. Like, yeah. There's stuff opposed to that, and then there's people like, rah, like, I don't even know how to
do
it. Like, oh, Monty.
Can I name and shame one influencer who I really, really like, but I cannot listen to?
Go on.
Like, this person is never going to listen to us. You know Grace Beverly?
Yeah.
I really like her.
She did music at Oxford, didn't she? Like the
I
one.
I can't remember. I think so.
She used to be Grace Fit.
I don't know her though.
She owns Tala.
The blonde. She's blonde.
She's blonde. And yeah. I really, really like her as a creator. Like she's very. She's super successful and she has like a great business. And she's also, one thing I really like is that, about her is that she's very transparent about the behind the scenes of her business. And she's very willing and open to giving people advice. And she kind of really like democratizes a lot of kind of information, right? And I really, really, really do like that about her. And I think it's very inspirational how successful she is. And I try to engage with her content because I like it, but I just can't listen to her. Oh my God, I can't. Ugh, she's so posh.
I think that's fair enough. I think she'd appreciate the fact that you'd say, you're not saying that you dislike it.
No, I like that. But that's the thing. That's why it's annoying, because I want to listen and watch her like stuff because I like it. And it's like, I just can't listen to you.
I have that with American influencers, a lot of their accents. Like the New Jersey accent really.
Really? Why?
Yeah. If it's Jersey Shore, like Snooki, fine.
I have met
one American influencer who I think is from there, and she has that accent where it's like, I think, do you know, he's a makeup artist.
Yeah, I think this is my one.
Grease, the one. Have you seen the thing? The one where she makes like 50
Michaela,
videos.
Yes.
Yeah. And then
like, we're going to Dubai.
Yeah. Like Grease.
Literally.
Mykonos.
When you started saying this, I was like, oh yeah, there's someone that it's the same for me. I mean, I feel bad that I feel that way towards her, but also I'm just like, but it actually just puts me off.
A lot of people do take the
mick
out of her, though.
Yeah.
It really gets in my head.
I don't mind. I genuinely don't mind any other accent apart from received pronunciation. That's the one thing I can't.
I just don't. I don't like the rah, where's my backy? And as someone from the South who has come across a lot of rah, where's my backy people, that is the one that really just.
That's it. That's the one. That's what I'm talking about. That.
That I've realised the quote from Michaela is Kim Kardashian. That's the one.
I don't mind New Jersey too much. Guys, can I segue? Speaking about Spanish before. Have you guys seen Montoya, por favor?
Literally, I've got it on my list. How it? No, Simran wouldn't have seen it because it's been all over Twitter, isn't it?
It's like, so funny!
Like, let me explain to Simran, right?
No, you can't explain it. Simran, you have to watch it. You just have to watch it.
I was going to, wait, have you got Twitter downloaded?
If you send me a tweet, I can look at like the one tweet.
Just send it to her. Just send it to her, because let's discuss something else in the meantime.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was literally about to say, because I was going to bring this through at the end, because it's
I have the English subtitle one. Let me, because I sent it to.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, let's discuss this at the end, because this is something that's going to bring our spirits up.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Wait, I'm going to send it to you.
But yeah. Whilst Halim is doing that, one thing I wanted to ask you, Simran, thoughts on The Weeknd's album? Simran's just collapsed. I'm presuming that's a good thing.
Oh, okay.
Guys. It's been 3 years.
Has it?
Yeah.
Since Dawn FM?
Yeah.
Surely not. 3 years.
Yeah, it has been. It has been.
That's mad. I can't believe that. I thought I would have said thought maybe two, but three.
I'm fact checking, but I'm pretty. 2022. It's been 3 years.
That's mad. I didn't realize that.
It's been 3 years. I don't think I've listened to anything other than this album since it came out. Literally, it has changed my life. It's so, I'm not going to bang on too much because I know you're not going to let me, but literally, I've been crying, I've been smiling, I've just been everything. It's just so good. It's such a good conclusion to him as an artist, as like going under this Weeknd name. Like, it's just the most perfect conclusion. It makes so much sense. Like, it's just...
The one thing that I really liked is I saw a clip that someone had done where they put the very last track of Hurry Up Tomorrow, that's the name of the album, isn't it? Hurry Up Tomorrow, and then they started the beginning of his first mixtape with High For This, and it literally segues exactly.
Perfect loop.
Yeah.
Like, I think this just goes to show, like, everything I've ever said about him on this show, about how he just thinks, like, a level above everyone else. Like, he just thinks of everything. And the genius is just... And Mike Dean as a producer. And if he ever does a concert with a full orchestra in the background to this album, it would literally be absolutely insane. Because, like, the production on this album is next level, as with all the other albums. But I just think it's so good. And I need to go get tickets, but apparently they're really expensive based on what has come out in the North America tour. But I don't care.
I actually listened to it on the plane ride back. And, like, it wasn't, like, all, like, my style of music. I don't know if you, like, if this means anything to you, but I preferred the second half of the album.
Preferred the first half.
Nah.
But I have genuinely been listening to the whole album like it's one big song. Like, I just don't skip through any of it. And obviously there's a couple of songs that are, like, 30 seconds long and they're just, like, transition songs.
I've always just, like, I can't sing. Like...
Yeah, but this is what I think there's going to be a documentary. Obviously he's making a film with Barry Keoghan and Jenna Ortega. That's coming out in May, I think. The trailer dropped. And then I think there's going to be a documentary. Because that clip where he's like, oh, I can't sing. That sounded like it was like behind the scenes, like microphone footage.
Interesting.
I mean, it's going to be a documentary. There's definitely a movie. Not going to lie. I watched a trailer for a movie. Cannot figure out for the life of me what it's going to be about. Like what the plot of it is going to be.
Yeah, but Weeknd as a music artist and Weeknd as an actor are two very different things.
Why I've never seen The Idol, because everyone told me not to.
Yeah, I think it's best not to.
Yeah.
I think he obviously knows that The Idol kind of flopped and he got criticism for his acting. I think this is a redemption. I think he knows that the stakes are like high.
But anyway, hopefully. Maybe let other people watch it before you watch it, though, Simran.
I'm just sad because I think it's going to be a very long time before he releases more music.
This is the thing, so... Has he said why he's stopping The Weeknd?
He basically said it's been done. Like, no one else could have done it like he's done it. And there's no... pushed it to, like, the limit. Like, there's just no more that can be done under The Weeknd. Like, he's changed and evolved as a person so much that it's just time to put that chapter to bed. The trilogies have, like, been complete. Like, all three trilogies and then the whole trilogy, like, as a whole... work of 9 albums, like it's been complete and now it's time to like put it. But he basically said there's nothing more that can be done as The Weeknd. It's time to like continue as Abel.
I find that such like an interesting concept, but I also really respect it to know like the limits of your own artistry and the limits of your own creativity. And it's, you know, that phrase of like it's better to like retire as a hero than. Yeah. Like, you die as a villain, whatever. You know? Like, it's...
Live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
The villain, that's it, yeah. Like, you know, retire with, like, your head high, like, that you've...
Yeah.
instead of just kind of... I respect it because, in a way, it's kind of very, like, anti-industry to just keep churning out album after album for the sake of, like, churning them out and actually understanding, like, does it make sense for my own, like, creativity and me as an artist? Yeah. Like, it doesn't, so...
Because I think, like... He kind of knows that. I think that's what he said. Like, that's it. There's no otherwise. I'd just be like, forcing it.
Yeah.
And he did kind of say, like, I think for him, like, I'm saying, like, I know him, but, like, I think for him, like, there's two things. Like, half of his fan base is like, we want Trilogy / Kissland Weekend. We want the old Weekend back. And then the other half is like, he'll never get away from being the guy that made Blinding Lights. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I can't feel my face. So I think he wants to put it to bed and then just kind of, like, be detached from all of that. Like, yeah, it exists. That was me. But, like, this is who I am now. And I'm, like, not the Weekend anymore. I'm able, which is, like, good for him, you know, because he wasn't an industry plant. Like, he literally was homeless before. He was posting, like, Trilogy came out on SoundCloud in, like, 2011 or whatever it was. He was homeless. He was couch surfing and he was, like, not in a good place. And now look at him.
Good for Abel.
Real underdog story.
Right, well, sticking on America, but also going over to the East. There's been a lot going on in Pakistan over the past week. some like funny, some definitely not funny. And I think it's best. I think it's interesting how these two kind of instances actually kind of overlap in a way. So I think let's start with the more light-hearted one, which is
someone has something to say.
Yeah, let's talk about this. Okay, go on.
I vaguely know what happened, but I kind of left it for today because I wanted you guys to explain it.
Right.
So this is Simran's live reaction.
Let's talk about Anisha Andrew Robinson, who is the woman that has gone over to Pakistan. So she's 32 and she travelled to Karachi in October 2024 to meet and marry Nidal Ahmed Memon, a 19-year-old Pakistani man. However, upon arrival, the 19-year-old rejected her and his family said they were opposed to the marriage. For context as well, Anisha is also a black American woman as well. I think that goes without saying.
How old is she?
Why have I set an alarm for now? She's 32, so she's a 32 black American woman and he's 19. So there's already a bit of like a there. But yeah, the family were opposed to the marriage and it was reported also that money was raised for her to return home. However, she refused and she's still there. So basically, she's gone on social media and has been telling her story and she's basically become
Even social media. She's on she's on national news. They're doing press conferences.
So she basically, obviously, after she got rejected, she didn't have anywhere to go. So she just started wandering around Karachi, like, just, like, speaking to random people, telling her story, and, like Helena said, like, going on the news and everything. And she keeps on repeating this idea that they were meant to elope to Dubai and have their baby there. And she keeps on saying, like, oh, I'm married to this guy and we're moving to Dubai soon, we're going to have our baby there.
Are you sure she's 32?
Yeah. She doesn't look 32. Let me fact check that because, like,
because also, she's basically what like, it's funny, but because she's come forward and she's like, I demand 20,000, you know, from the Pakistani government for my upkeep, and then I demand another 100,000. I'm gonna take over this country. I'm gonna fix this country. I want to give, you know, people proper housing and proper resources and things like that. And everyone's laughing because it's like, oh, this woman has come here for a man, and she's, you know, like, just taking over the Pakistani government. And, you know, they're kind of like entertaining her, like obliging her in a way, you know. But I think actually firstly, I was going to say, like, I think a lot of people have kind of breathed a sigh of relief seeing the way that the Pakistani government and community have been treating her, because obviously, as Carla said, she is a black woman, and, like, historically in non-black countries, black women don't tend to, like, there's always a risk of, like, you know, abuse and discrimination and oppression and whatever. So I think the fact that people have been treating her nicely and kind of been showing her care and stuff like that, there's been like a kind of collective sigh of relief there. That's first of all. But I think also there's something a little bit more sinister at play here, because, and the reason why I ask, is she actually 32 is because I think her children had come forward and said that she's
this is what I don't understand. So when you just said that, I've gone and checked, and apparently online everyone's saying that yes, she's 32 33, but her son, someone who says that they're her son, has come forward and said, like, look, she's got mental health issues, she's bipolar. But I am a bit confused.
At 32 years,
like,
old, how old can your son be? For,
yeah, that's
unless you had your son, like, really, really young.
That's what I'm a bit confused about. But the thing is, also, she's married with kids, apparently.
Right, so I don't think she's 32, because she doesn't, respectfully, she doesn't look 32 either. Yeah, she just looks a lot older.
Yeah.
So I think she's probably a bit older. So I think this is a bit like concerning, which is like we're all laughing at it because it's like novel, right? It's like it's ridiculous.
And it's like, for example, she's going around saying that, oh, I'm demanding this much money from the government to set up my life. Like,
yeah.
And it's also funny because sometimes she refers to it in, I think, rupees, for example. Yeah. And it's like she's saying, oh, 100K. And it's like, that's literally nothing.
It's not
like,
much, girl. It's not much. You're going to demand more. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's a level of it which is like funny because it's just so ridiculous and it's so absurd. But then also it's like a bit concerning because this woman is obviously having like some kind of manic episode, you know, and then with the context of the fact that her family member have come forward and said that she does have bipolar, it's like, okay, she's obviously in need of some kind of help. And I do think the Pakistani people have been good here because I know there was like a particular community leader that had come forward and like they'd taken her to the hospital and they tried to like get her like some kind of care. But also, there's a little part of it which is like, why is she going to marry a 19-year-old? That's so weird.
But obviously, again, as well, if she has got...
If she's in an episode, if she's in an episode, yeah, I get it. But
I know that she has had run-ins with the law before because I was reading an article and one of them had a mugshot from, I think it was a home invasion she was involved in like 2021. So clearly... something's afoot here.
Yeah. So like, it's funny because it's like just ridiculous, but also at the same time, like, that woman clearly needs help.
But I suppose this is the question, right? It's that she's basically become a TikTok global viral sensation. Everyone's it's giving people laughter and it's like, it's giving people some positive, like something positive to look at. But then it's like, is it okay to kind of feel, is it okay to feel that way if you then acknowledge like, okay, but in all seriousness, this is actually bad. Like, can you do both?
Yeah, I think in this situation, yeah, because it's like, well, I don't know. I don't know if...
I think it's hard to say without the full context, but also I think I am a bit... The thing that I find annoying is the people that kind of going online saying like, oh, all you people that are like finding it funny, it's not funny, she's clearly mentally ill, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, but people don't have that context. All they've seen is this woman going around Karachi, like saying really, like...
Yeah. Also, it can still be comical. Like, it can still be comical. Like, and I say this as someone who has family members with similar mental health conditions and... Sometimes in their certain episodes, sometimes they can say things that are funny, you know? And it's the same way that, like, for example, I see people all the time on TikTok who have family members who, for example, have, like, Down syndrome. And they say funny things all the time, you know? Like, you could take the perspective of, oh, we shouldn't laugh at them, like, blah, 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 blah. It's cruel. But it's like, no, because also it's just funny. Do you know what I mean?
It's all about, like, humanizing people who might have mental health conditions. Doesn't mean they can't be funny.
Yeah, and I think also, She has agency to actually... She is the one that's been uploading all this stuff, a lot of it. So I'm kind of like...
I didn't know that.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Simran?
Is there not also something to be said? It's kind of like the weird, almost like American / colonizery mentality of like...
Right.
Coming to a place and seeing the conditions and being like, I got to fix this. These people need a better quality of life. I can do something to change and make these people's lives better.
I have seen.
Unless there was one clip, they need buses and cabs and homes and stuff.
I have seen some people take that perspective. That some people have just been like, I don't find it funny, and I don't have sympathy for her. She's, you know, like a predator. She's gone over to marry like a young man, and now that she's there, she's been like a typical American thinking about taking over. Blah 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 blah. But again, I just don't think you could take anything she says or does really very seriously if she's really in an episode. You know, you just have to take it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah,
I think.
I didn't know. I actually didn't know. But all I saw was one clip of her beefing a translator on some press conference.
Yeah,
this is the thing. Like when you were saying about how they've treated her well, I've seen some clips where like she actually is quite rude to people.
That man's patience when she's like basically being like, sit down and stop talking, and he's just trying to translate what she's saying.
Yeah, but again, I think. Like I said, there has been like a collective sigh of relief with how she's been treated. Ultimately, they are treating her with the patience of someone who was like not well, you know, and they try to like get her kind of some medical care and stuff like that.
Which is nice to see.
Yeah, from a which is
like that doesn't normally like India, like so many of those countries that don't really like recognize mental health as a proper like condition.
Exactly.
And like acceptance and open hearing and stuff.
So that's been an interesting corner of the internet the past, like,
I did see, like, a couple of TikToks from, like, black people being like, guys, we've got to go to Pakistan because they fuck with us
yeah.
over there.
Apologies to anyone who heard that. Simran, just a reminder, we are live on air, so you can't swear the F word. Apologies, Simran.
Apologies. It's not me for once. Simran, it's not me for
Simran,
once.
Simran, apologize.
So I'm...
No, we need a notes apology, Simran. We need to post a notes apology. That's what we need.
No, we don't. Yeah, right. No, but in all seriousness, Simran.
Okay, I'm joking.
Apologize.
She's writing on her notes.
No, Simran. No, Simran, you need to say sorry. It's an off-chrome
requirement. I'm sorry.
Right, thank you. Right. Moving on.
Guys, I have something to say about Pakistan. Can I? It's news.
Is it the...
No.
Over the... Okay, go on.
I was going to send this to you and I completely forgot. Something very interesting. So Bangladesh and Pakistan have started chartering flights to each other's countries for the first time in apparently 50 years, 50 plus years, which is very interesting. It comes in light of bolstered kind of diplomatic relations between the two countries and kind of like talks of kind of increased trade corridors between the two countries, which, if you don't know the context, is quite a big deal because obviously Bangladesh did in 1971 break away from Pakistan after we were basically occupied by them and they kind of like put us through a genocide. So there is a very kind of like dark, like sinister history there. And I think that in light of that, it has caused a lot of strained relationships between the two countries and the two people. And like me growing up somewhere like Longsight in Manchester, which is predominantly South Asian, and it's a huge community of Bangladeshi and Pakistani people, despite having Pakistani friends and going to school with Pakistani people and having Pakistani neighbours and stuff like that, there you do kind of always see kind of like underlying tension between the communities. And, you know, I know I've spoken before particularly about kind of the level of racism that Bangladeshi still face from Pakistani people, and also on a very, very deep level, the kind of reality of genocide denial from the Pakistani state. However, I was thinking, so now when, obviously, because we have a new government in Bangladesh, right, now that Sheikh Hasina has been ousted, and I've been thinking, okay, how do I feel personally about kind of these increased, like, you know, these naturalized relations with Pakistan, someone who we've historically, as I said, have had strained relations with. And there was this one video I watched on TikTok, and it was a Pakistani vlogger had gone to Bangladesh, and in every single scene, like every single person he met, they are like him as a Pakistani man, and like every single Bengali man that he comes across, they're like hugging and kissing each other, and they're just so showing each other so much love, and they're like, oh, I love you, you're my brother, I love you so much, like complete strangers, right? And it just kind of, it did actually really, really warm me. And I just started to think about the fact that, like, this, I think in the trauma of 1971, where things were really dark between the two people and the two communities, I think that there has been a lot of lost sentiment of kinship, because obviously it's a very complicated history and there is one side that is wrong. Like, Pakistan did enact a genocide on us. That just can never be denied. However, I think there are also parts of history where there was togetherness and there was kinship that just gets completely overridden, I guess. So in light of, you know, in light of the, you know, what the two governments kind of trying to bring relations together, it has, I think I'm trying to take a positive look on it. You know, I think for Bangladesh, listen, I will never deny an ally. You know, the more allies we have, the better. I would say, however, I think personally what's necessary is that the Pakistani state should issue an official apology. I know that states don't tend to issue apologies because then they have to pay reparations. And I think, to be honest, in this case, I mean, that would be ideal. I don't think we're going to get that far. But the reparations could be kind of certain concessions on trade deals or something like that. You know, that could be a form of reparations. But at the very least, you know, I do think it's very important they do give like an acknowledgement and an apology for 1971. And, well, to be fair, like the 3 decades before then. But yes, that's what my 2 pence is.
I think that an apology would go a long way, but I think it could be a good thing. It could be a good thing, you know, to have trade relations and diplomatic relations.
It is interesting how flights are like the first step of that.
Right, as an indicator of, you know, relations, absolutely. Because usually when two countries also have difficulty with each other, flights stop.
Mm.
So, but yes, that's an interesting thing that I've been thinking about recently.
Mm. Well,
I clicked the link that Halima sent me and it was just some woman's bum.
Some what? Oh, keep watching it. I'll explain to you the context at the end. You need to keep watching it.
Right. On a more serious note, the third and final thing relating to Pakistan that I wanted to discuss, which kind of links to the Anisha, the woman that went over to Pakistan, in the sense that this is a story of some people that also have gone from the US to Pakistan. A man, Anwar al-Haq, recently moved his family back to Pakistan from the US, and he's confessed to killing his teenage daughter because he disapproved of her TikTok videos. So Hira Anwar, who was around 13-14, she was the person uploading these TikTok videos, and her the police have said that her family had an objection to her dressing, lifestyle and social gathering. Their family had lived in the US for 25 years, and she had been posting content before they moved back. And I think the thing that people are kind of pointing out here is the fact that this is an example of some people, again, similarities here in the sense that it's someone who was in the US and has gone to Pakistan. Mm.
Had a very, very different
experience. Had a very different experience. And also the fact that this has received minimal coverage and attention compared to Anisha. Do you know what I mean? So I'm just kind of like, people, that's one thing where I can kind of agree when people are like, why is it that we're looking at the funny side of the news in Pakistan, which ultimately is, it's ridiculous. It's funny, but it's ridiculous. It's nothing of real substance here.
Mm.
Yet this is a very real problem and something that is still happening, and yet people aren't really paying attention to it. Yeah. Or acknowledging it. I think also they were kind of speaking of the people of Pakistan as well, in the sense that people were like, oh, kind of like looking at Anisha and be like, oh, this is like hilarious, and yet literally an honor killing is alleged to have taken place here, and people aren't necessarily acknowledging that.
I think that I think it's just people are just having aversion to like bad news, right? So they kind of all privilege the better news in this situation. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's important to kind of be able to draw like the parallels between the two, you know, like to know that one, like two different women can go to like the same country and have like vastly different experiences. What was her name? Sorry,
Hira.
I guess in the case of like Hira, she is obviously Pakistani. She's from the Pakistani culture, and ultimately there is a issue there with honor-based violence. Like that just is a reality that needs desperately to be contended with. I know that it has been part of like, you know, South Asian culture at large. For kind of really millennia, to be honest with you, but we should have progressed past that point like a long, long, long time ago. Like to be at the point where we are still like the honor-based violence is still happening is just, it's like it's always unjustifiable, but especially now where so much of society and culture has changed and kind of like this is the thing that certain people have chosen to latch onto is crazy. I think that it's a part of a wider kind of global pattern of gendered violence, because honor-based violence, it's not in the name, but it is gendered. Like it kind of like, I would say 9.9 out of 10 times happens to women rather than men. And I think it kind of speaks to that expectation of women to uphold the family's honors, to uphold the family's values, to be a representative and a kind of like subaltern, you know, to the men in the family, you know, the patriarchs of the family.
But I, one thing I will say as well, though, is that I sometimes I find it personally as a South Asian person, because obviously this is a Pakistani context, but this is an issue that plagues like all South Asian communities, I would say, to varying degrees. But sometimes I find it really hard to talk frankly about these things because, and I don't know if you guys relate, but I find it hard because I don't want to give like racists kind of further ammunition. And I think it's important to not localize the issue to be a South Asian thing. Like, yes, absolutely, it has taken on a regional character that you might not necessarily see elsewhere in the world. However, as I say, it's one part of a global pattern of gendered violence. You know, it's exactly the same thing as we see like in the UK when men kill women for rejecting their advances. I saw a thing, someone was talking about it today, where they also likened it to, for example, the retracting of reproductive rights over in America. You know, like all of these are kind of like interconnected issues about, you know, women's safety and their right to life and their right to kind of live the way that they want. So even though, as I say, South Asia has a particular problem, you can't kind of, you have to extrapolate it onto the wider global issue of gendered violence. I would say.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think even like covering it on this show, I think there's some kind of apprehension on, because I think it would be wrong to ignore it and be wrong to brush over it. But at the same time, like you say, that is that there is that worry that you're kind of feeding to the flames of people who will ultimately just jump on it straight away and be like, well, this is an issue. I told you these like brown people have an issue and they need to sort it out.
They're doing it to their daughters. Yeah. They're going to do it to ours if you let them in. Like, and it's just ridiculous that that's even something that we have to contend with, because as I said, honour-based violence is a reality that we need to kind of tackle. You know, and it's so annoying that in the midst of that, that we also have to consider like, oh, how do we balance the line between this and kind of not giving racist people ammunition? Like, I don't know.
The thing that I'm like that struck me as well was I was reading about it and they were saying if this particular case is found to be an honor killing, then the men involved will face a mandatory life sentence. But the fact that it's mandatory was actually only changed in 2016.
That's crazy.
Previously in Pakistan, they could avoid a jail term if pardoned by the victim's family.
But most of the time, they are the victim's family.
Mm.
So that just goes to show how deeply normalized honor-based violence and the ideology of honor-based violence is in South Asian communities. Like, they really just see it as like a part of the culture, you know, and they attach so much like it's in the name. Like, there's no greater dishonor than like murder, you know, there's no greater dishonor than that. And yet they believe it to be honorable. It's so twisted, because really what you have is you're tackling an entire ideology. You're kind of trying to undo millennia of consensus and culture, you know, and it's much harder than just putting a ban on it or putting a punishment on it. Mm. You have to convince people that it's wrong in the first place.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's just important that anyone that is finding some kind of positivity and joy in the like madness of what Anisha is saying and doing also acknowledges the fact that this is a equally, if not definitely more important story from the same area that deserves recognition and acknowledgement and attention.
Yeah.
Especially again, as we've seen, it's been people that have gone from the US to Pakistan as well.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst we're on whilst we're on a more serious note, let's talk about what Trump's been up to this past week.
I don't want to. I mean, I'm going to have to, but I don't want to. God.
Donald Trump has decided this week that he effectively wants to ethnically cleanse Palestine. And he's been it wasn't a one-time thing. It's all week he's been saying the same type of thing.
All week, guys, it's not even been a week. It's been since, like... Sorry,
go on, Simran.
We were talking about this a few weeks ago, and he was effectively just saying, like, there's so much opportunity for development there. There's a beautiful beachfront location where we will build developments and property and businesses. And it's like, he's not actually seeing the fact that this is people's homes and livelihoods. It's just dollar signs.
Sorry, Lima.
I was going to say, like, it's not even... I think a lot of people have... Obviously, because since October 2023, like, people have kind of really come to the Palestine issue, like they hadn't previously. I think a lot of people aren't necessarily aware of certain politicians' stance that had been... that they'd expressed before 2023. Like, Donald Trump, for example, I think it was 2016 or 2017, like, during his presidency, his first presidency, he had really... unilaterally declared Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and like had plans to move, I don't know if he actually went through with it, but had plans to move the US embassy to Jerusalem, like the US embassy of Israel to Jerusalem, which if people aren't aware, like, it's such an affront, precisely because as part of the UN agreement, Jerusalem was supposed to be left kind of like to share, because obviously it's a holy place for Muslims, Christians and Jewish people. So it was supposed to be kind of like out of the contest between Israel and Palestine, and it was supposed to be like a shared zone. So for Donald Trump to kind of just come swoop in and be like, okay, I'm overturning like 70 years of like global political consensus, and I'm gonna say that Jerusalem belongs to Israel, like, it was huge, it was massive at the time, and it was such a kick in the teeth to Palestinians, and it really, really kind of placed a huge hurdle in their fight for like liberation. So Donald Trump, for those of you who have been watching and listening, has made his stance very, very clear. He has like made his side and kind of his allyship very, very clear from like nearly a decade ago, you know, and has taken political action to kind of really show that. It's not just talk, you know. So I'm not surprised. Like,
no, I don't think... Not necessarily surprised. For me, it's been more like when I was looking into this
just
as well.
Just the audacity.
No, and seeing that it wasn't a singular talk point. I mean, obviously we know Netanyahu has been over visiting him. He's literally the first foreign
state visitor
since Trump's new term. But to the fact that I think at least three separate instances this week, Trump has been saying to the public about how it's time to clean out Gaza and encouraging countries like Jordan and Egypt to take in people from Palestine. He said the US will take over the Gaza Strip and will do a job with it too. We'll be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and the weapons on the site, level the site, get rid of the destroyed buildings, create an economic development that will supply an unlimited number of jobs and housing for the people of the area. And he's basically also said to the people to not go back, because then if they go back, it's going to end up the same way it has for 100 years.
I think this is kind of really like the mask off moment here, because obviously Israel, with alongside their greatest ally, the US, have enacted this like genocide on the Palestinian people, and they've done it on like several fronts. You know, they've put on several facades this entire time. We're doing it, you know, to kind of free the area of terrorism. We're doing it to get our hostages back. We're doing it because we're under attack. We're doing it to get rid of Hamas. We're doing it to blah, blah. Just excuse after excuse after excuse. And I think finally now, you know, after the ceasefire, this is really the mask off moment, and this is like, okay, this is actually what they've been doing it for, really, to kind of gain real estate and kind of capital control over Palestinian land. It's really funny from the Israeli state, because they initially were like, oh, Gazans are all terrorists, they are all part of Hamas, like, you know, when Israel were indiscriminately bombing Gazans, their line was, they're all terrorists, they're all part of Hamas. And now that obviously they want control and they need the Palestinians and the Gazans gone, their line has changed to Gazans are the number one victim of Hamas and they deserve to live a dignified life, ... elsewhere. you know, and this is like, it is, it cannot be any clearer. Like, this is a call for ethnic cleansing. Like, you are removing a people from their homeland. Like, this discussion has been ongoing this entire time, where there's been a push and pull between, like, okay, well, just tell people to leave then. And it's been this whole, I know Palestinians and allies have tried really hard to convey this idea that they shouldn't have to leave. That's their home. You know, they should be able to be safe in their home. The answer isn't that if you want to be safe, you have to leave your homeland.
I think as well as the fact on Thursday that he said the Gaza Strip would be turned over to the United States by Israel at the conclusion of fighting, which I found quite interesting. Like, also, aside from the fact that obviously it's disgusting for them to speak about it like that, but also the fact that it's like handed over by Israel. So I'm like, does Israel know that they want to
hand it over? Yeah. I know. But that's an interesting dynamic as well, because now it's kind of like the US have kind of come out front and just like really, really, it's a mask off moment for them, really. I don't know. I feel like you can't get any. Like, the kind of call for ethnic cleansing just cannot get any clearer. Like, these are people talking very out and out about the removal of a native people from their homeland to turn it into, as Trump described it, something that essentially makes capital.
Which, again, is completely against international law.
Right.
But as if we've seen anything over the past year and a half.
So it doesn't apply to certain countries.
Yeah.
And also, in even more sickening and sadistic news, did you see the gift that Netanyahu gave to Trump?
No.
He gave him the stump of an olive tree with a golden pager on it, and it said, "Press with both hands." And engraved, it said, "To President Donald Trump, our greatest friend and greatest ally of President Netanyahu."
That's disgusting.
A pager, which was what was used as explosives to literally bomb Lebanon, target Hezbollah.
I don't know. I feel like there's something, you know, like really, obviously there's so many layers to this kind of like issue. And one thing that I find that I really like, just I'm so sympathetic to the Palestinian people for, is the way that their entire, obviously their homeland has been robbed, but also like their cultural identity, like... The olive tree and olives are very, very symbiotic with like Palestinian culture, you know, and it's like a very proud emblem of Palestinian culture and Palestinian people. So for Netanyahu to kind of like really hijack that and give an olive tree as a symbol of like Israeli culture is crazy. And I see Israeli society do this all the time when they just start claiming certain Palestinian, like, you know, aspects of Palestinian culture as their own, and it, what this is really like a cultural erosion.
Definitely.
I mean
I suppose is it a positive that we've seen that multiple countries around the world have come out and said, like, look, yeah, like this isn't on, like you can't do that. But
you know, Trump is so scary precisely because he just doesn't care. Like, he really, really does what he wants. Like, so much of what he does, you're like, how is this real? Like, this has to be, like, satire. Like, so many times I'll see his tweets on my, like, Twitter timeline. I don't follow him. They just come up. And I'll have to double check if it's, like, a parody account or his actual account.
Yeah.
When that statement first came out about we're going to take over and we're going to do this and we're going to do that, I genuinely need to check if it was a parody. And I saw the blue tick and I was like, oh my days. Like,
well, that doesn't mean anything nowadays anyway.
Well, no, true, but it was his account, you know.
Yeah.
This also reminds me, this is a bit of a segue, so I won't move on until we're done. But
yeah,
this is
also, I'm done.
Yeah, go for it.
Kanye West.
I was just thinking about that. Literally, as I was talking about Trump, I was just thinking about that.
Anti-Semitic sentiment, very messed up.
I mean, the most anti-Semitic thing probably that
I don't even know how to say it on radio.
It's insane.
Right, well, I think Kanye West tweeted saying, "I am a Nazi."
No, he didn't tweet once. There is an entire stream of tweets where he is endorsing Elon's Nazi salute. He is self-proclaiming a Nazi. He's saying things like, and I'm quoting here, "I don't trust Jews. Jews are this, Jews are that. I will never go into business with a Jew because I don't trust them."
It is anti-Semitism, like, I don't think I've seen before like that on a public platform. So brazen.
And is it still up?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Is that God, Simran?
Which is an interesting point after we talk about the woman, the American woman that went to Pakistan on mental health, on, like, taking these people seriously and giving them a voice, but also when they overstep the line like this.
Well, this is where this is where Elon Musk should step in and be like, look, because also the fact that Kanye, I think he's met with Elon this week or something.
No, he's literally on Twitter saying, yeah, "I love Elon's Twitter. They can't censor me. Elon's letting me say all of this."
This is where Elon should step in and being like, look, like, this is where there's a difference between free speech and hate speech.
Right,
like,
exactly.
So I'm going to remove this.
We're talking about the man that did two nasty salutes on public press conference. I don't think it's going to come from him, but I don't know. I feel like Kanye West is an interesting one because he's obviously been having some kind of public breakdown and crises for several years now, and he's said several problematic things, and I feel like I've always been very sympathetic towards it because I'm like, okay, the guy's obviously not well. I know kind of how he was before these public breakdowns, and he seems like a sound guy, so, you know, I refrained from, like, full condemnation, whereas now I'm like, especially, like, the anti-Semitism. He's also said kind of really misogynistic things about his wife.
We're all parading around naked all the time as
is
well,
like, twisted what? As
like, what is up with... And there's been lots of people analysing the clips of them together and being like, is she actually okay with... What's...
And then he came forward and literally said in a tweet, I have full dominion over my wife. Like, that's not...
And he said something along the lines of, like, I am a billionaire. What can she be angry about?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that sympathy really can be extended anymore at this point, where it's like, you're causing, like, real life material harm to, like, an entire demographic of people. You know, this is the anti-Semitism that these stop anti-Semitic hate group need to be on. Like, you need to join your forces and run Kanye West off of the face of the, not get rid of him, but, like, you know, don't give him a platform, hold him to account. Like, you need to run him off Twitter, like, after holding him to account. That's a real anti-Semitism that is actually abhorrent to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, whilst we're on the topic of Elon Musk and inevitably, and also the topic of speaking poorly of demographics of people being racist, have you seen what happened with a member of his staff?
No.
So basically, a member of Elon Musk's staff was found to have made multiple racist tweets, and we're not talking about tweets from, like, 10 years ago. Not that that's any better, but obviously when tweets are from a long time
ago, you could say, like, they learn.
A person can change, potentially. Right. But these are tweets from literally summer of last year. So it's
oh my
not,
God.
Tweets, for example, that said, and I quote, "Just for the record, I was racist before it was cool.
Oh my God.
You could not pay me to marry outside of my ethnicity. And perhaps the most interesting one for this show, normalize Indian hate."
I mean, clearly he's been successful. God.
And the thing is, so he got fired from, because he was a member of Elon Musk's Doge thing.
Right.
And he got fired. And then Elon Musk has come back and said he will be brought back. To err is human, to forgive divine.
Oh my God.
But it doesn't stop there, because obviously Doge, this is a governmental thing, right? Vice President JD Vance has come out and said that the young employee is like a 25-year-old, not that I think everyone's, your full frontal lobe is like, whatever, but that he said that he should be given a second chance.
Not the man with the Indian wife. Normalize Indian hate.
Your wife and also his kids as well. And you're saying normalize Indian hate. Like, what is this? Like,
this is, we live in hell. We live in hell.
I don't understand. Like,
This is why ethnic people, listen, I can't plead with white people no more. Ethnic people, stop marrying racist white people, because you know what? You're going to be used as a scapegoat. This man, JD Vance, has the ultimate trump card now for anyone that throws any charge of racism, pardon the pun, any charge of racism against him, because now he's just like, oh, well, my wife is racist. I mean, my wife is Indian. That was a Freudian slip.
Yeah.
My wife, well, because I'm sure she's also...
Well, yeah, my wife is Indian, therefore I can support someone who says normalize Indian hate. And not even that, like I've seen, like, pictures of his kids as well. Like, they look brown. One of them's called Vivek. Like, literally, like, this thing of you promoting this, like, supporting someone who says normalize Indian hate, that is going to have
your
a lasting
children.
Impact on your kids, like...
These people don't believe what do they call it? Transcend race. They believe they transcend race. You know, they believe like, oh, they're not talking about me, the Indian. You know, it's not my kind of Indian. It's the other kind of Indian. It's crazy.
So.
Indeed.
Let's talk a little bit about all the bad things on.
No.
Bad Vibes Island.
I'm on Simran's floor today.
As if there wasn't enough bad vibes around the world, we're bringing it to the UK. Have me saying Bad Vibes Island caused everyone, like, you're starting coughing, Simran started sneezing.
I'm allergic to it.
Is this some kind of, like, tactic to get us not to talk about it?
Bad vibes. All I have on my mind now is Montoya, por favor.
Have you actually watched the video?
Yeah, now
right,
I get
okay,
it.
Okay, right, we'll talk about that at the very end. But let's just try and skim through this. We've seen what leader of the Tory party, Kemi, has been up to this week.
Get rid of birthright.
Yeah.
Citizenship, for God's sake.
So the Tories have announced...
You know what? It's the exact same thing as this JD Vance saying, endorsing anti-Indian hate.
I still have to pinch myself when I remind us that the leader of the Tory party is a black woman now. Like,
yeah, but it's
why is she getting to enact anything when they're not in power right now?
Well, I think it's like, oh, if we were in power, this is what we're gonna do.
Wait, like, yeah, she's a black woman, but she's also very, a lot of her politics are anti-black, like, so
scapegoat.
Well, she is saying that migrants on work visas who claim benefits should be barred from settling indefinitely in the UK. The period before migrants can apply for indefinite leave to remain should be extended from the current 5 to 10 years. And they've also said that migrants should only be able to apply for British citizenship after having indefinite leave to remain for 15 years.
So they've increased that from what was it, 10 or 5?
I think it was 5, you know. I'm pretty sure.
I know my uncles are on one right now that's 10.
Oh, I don't know what, indefinite leave to remain?
Yeah, 10 years.
Yeah, no, I mean...
They came on a work visa, so a skilled worker visa.
Yeah, but the thing that... It's the fact that you would have to be in the UK with indefinite leave to remain for 15 years before even being able to apply for British citizenship.
That's insane.
And the thing that really
insane.
Irks me as well is the way that they're speaking about how, like, oh, like, the current rules have created a conveyor belt for citizenship. Too many people are getting citizenship through, and it's creating a strain on public services. I'm just like...
No, it's not. It's because you lot are fleecing the taxpayer for all they have.
As people that actually know people that have applied for citizenship, I can ascertain that it's not an easy process at all.
Oh, you're like, telling me.
Especially for someone like, for example, who has migrated to the UK, who doesn't necessarily have anyone here or doesn't have like a knowledge of like also like the way that things work here and also British history, like the whole test thing as well.
Life in the UK, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Like, Simran failed.
Like, born and bred Brit and she failed. Like, and like I bet most people would. But yeah, we Simran's laughing at something.
The way he said that.
Halima passed.
Okay, retest me again.
Okay.
Rematch.
It has been 4 years. Maybe it's time. Your probation period has passed. You can do it again now.
But no, we talk all the time about how actually, contrary to what
the average Brit believes about, you know, the lack of border control, that actually UK immigration policies are, in fact, extremely oppressive, extremely discriminatory, extremely cumbersome to kind of like really get through, even when you are like a legit, and by the way, I don't believe in titles of legit or illegitimate, like, but, you know, in the eyes of the law, even when you are like a completely legit immigrant, even then, the kind of hoops that you have to jump through are insane. So to kind of like posit the issue of a strain on public resources, on immigrants, and then use that as a scapegoat to tighten immigration policies is insane. Because firstly, it's factually incorrect. There is literally not one single study that has shown that an increase of migrants in any one area has been the sole causal factor of a strain of any public resource. The real fact of the matter is because we have incorrect tax usage in this country, or rather inappropriate tax usage in this country. The taxpayers' money is not going where it needs to be. The NHS is severely underfunded. Local councils are underfunded. Schools are underfunded. Youth clubs are underfunded. That's what the problem is.
I'm pretty sure most migrants, legal or illegal,
they pay a fee.
Also, they, most of them, I don't think, can actually claim benefits, and those that can get like, is it what, like 35 quid a week or something
like that. And also, if like, you're ridiculous. So if you're so het up about this idea of migrants like wrongfully claiming benefits, is that not a comment on the flaws of the benefit system that you as the government created? Should you not rather look at your own processes and your own bureaucracies than just say the fact that other people are claiming them, they're the issue?
Yeah, like, that's true, actually.
Well, that's too obvious. That's just far too obvious and in their face.
But I haven't thought about that. But yeah, go on, Simran.
I just feel like they're still just trying to rally this sentiment, like keeping this rhetoric up of as anti-migrant rhetoric of like, we're still here, guys. This is still a thing. Like, you guys can still believe in us. They're still just saying things, even though they don't have the power to actually enact any of this right now.
I think it's also, I think personally they're quaking in the boots because they're seeing the rise of reform and they're like, oh, this is actually a contender for us.
Right,
like,
and they're trying to now appeal to the far right factions that have, you know, deflected.
Forget how low can you go, it's how right can you go.
That's it. That's it. But I don't know. I just everything she says is just nonsense. It's ridiculous. And this is coming from a woman who, by the way, you know, a little bit of a life story on Kemi. Her mother flew to the UK to give birth to her so that she would have birthright citizenship. She then went and was brought up in Nigeria for,
I think, 16 years.
Something like that. And then she moved to the UK. So it's not making sense. Like, it's by your own laws, you would not have British citizenship, let alone be the leader of a mainstream political party in the UK.
It's like how Trump wanted to remove birthrights for children who have parents who aren't US citizens or born in the US. And it's like, that would literally affect your son. Like,
yeah. But that's what I mean. Like, these people don't think of themselves as, I don't know. I think there is, as I keep saying, there is a level of race transcending and like class transcending that these people believe applies to them.
As long as they have women and people of color on their payroll who are willing to get up on a stage and say this kind of stuff, they will be absolved of any kind of racial responsibility or class responsibility of any of these policies.
Yeah. Well, speaking, a final thing for Bad Vibes Island this week, something else that has been in politics news, they've decided, or the Labour government has decided, that they are going to demolish the remains of Grenfell Tower.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
So,
all the inquiries even concluded.
No, so this is the thing. So obviously we know 72 people died in the fire.
Which, at least.
Yeah, at least in 2017. And yeah, they've said that they're going to, over 2 years, demolish this tower. I think Angela Rayner made the announcement earlier this week. Grenfell United, which represents some of the bereaved families and survivors said it appeared no one supported the government's decision to demolish the block, with some backing a proposal to keep it as a memorial.
Right.
They've said ignoring the voices of the bereaved and the future of a loved one's gravesite is disgraceful and unforgivable. Some people have proposed that it should be stay upright at least until the, like someone just said, the inquiry has passed and people have been prosecuted or not. So, and the way things are looking as well, no charges, the charges looking like they're potentially going to be corporate manslaughter or fraud, no charges in relation to this tragedy are going to be announced until late 2026 at the earliest.
It feels, you know what it is, it's... It just feels like they're trying to, like, just sweep this all under the rug.
Mm.
They're trying to, like, push past this without actually having administered any real justice. I don't know if it's still the case, but I know that the last time I checked, which was not that long ago, the victims of, you know, the tragedy, Grenfell tragedy, still had not been rehomed properly. Mm. People have not, like, received proper reparations. And this is, like, years and years and years after the fact, right? So the fact that it happened is not just an injustice in itself, but the way that it's been handled in the aftermath of it has really, really, like, I think exposed a kind of very nasty, uncaring spirit, right, of the British authorities. And them trying to demolish and no doubt rebuild on top of it, without kind of, you know, consensus from the victims or the committee, the Grenfell committee, I think is indicative of the way that they've treated this whole thing, where they've just tried to minimize it the whole way through. Mm-hmm. They just tried to kind of, like, really, really just keep everything, like, low and quiet and try to just sweep things under the rug, because I don't think they're really trying to be accountable for it.
Mm. I think it is, you would just presume that it's something that is ultimately considered to be, and rightfully so, like a national tragedy, right? You'd think that after that, they would, if they're thinking, okay, like, it's been a while now, what are we going to do with this space? They would speak to the people who it's going to affect the most, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, considering the nature of the fact that there is a tragedy, like, yeah.
Apparently not.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's the thing. I think ultimately, I don't know what's gonna happen now, but I think that I think it was wrong of them to just swoop in and just suddenly be like, this is what we're doing. I don't doubt that that Angela Rayner, for example, delivered the message tactfully, but I think the actual fact that you just went straight with the announcement, we're doing this, rather than being like, okay, so look, like, something needs to happen with this space.
Ultimately. Right, and then consult the committee, yeah. Because obviously you haven't, and ultimately you need to privilege their opinion and what they want out of this, because they are the victims.
Yeah.
Sad.
It is sad. Right. Shall we round things off this week with a little bit of positive humour? So, Simran, you've watched the clip, yes?
Do you get the context, Simran?
Yeah, that's his partner.
Yeah.
So Temptation, right. Go on.
Yeah, I've seen the American version of it.
Yeah, so have I. It's funny.
So, Montoya, por favor. The La Isla de Tentaciones. Was that a good pronunciation?
Oh my God, Carlos.
Was that a good pronunciation, Simran?
Do it one more time.
La Isla de las Tentaciones. No?
As someone who's on nearly 500 Duolingo streak for Spanish, I'm going to say that.
You might look Spanish, right. But I don't think you sound it.
I'm going to say the UK version. Temptation Island. It's this Spanish reality TV show, most similar, I'd say, to like Love Island. Basically, the concept is they take couples and put them in two separate villas and then put in temptation to see whether the couples stick together or break up and give in to temptation ultimately. So it's basically like a full-on Casa Amor from Love Island, you know what I mean?
No, but these are long-term couples, yeah, who have been in the outside world together outside for a number of years.
Yeah, it's like real-life Casa Amor, basically. Like, you're taking real existing couples that have been together for time, putting them in two separate villas, and then putting in people, then seeing whether they decide to ultimately be unfaithful or not. And one clip in particular has gone viral. It's of a Spanish man called Montoya, who is in one villa, and the presenter of the show is showing him live camera footage of the other villa, in which his partner, Anita, is basically getting it on with another guy. Like, full-on getting it on, having sex. And he's just sitting there watching, and it's there's multiple levels to this, right? First of all, we see his reaction to it, and he's literally sitting there like grabbing his shorts and being like, "No!"
He's like yelling. Imagine like 90s R&B music video,
like to his knees, like no.
Literally grabbing the air, grabbing his shorts, like that was a different one. That was so basically, I think the clip that went viral first was the one of him watching his partner sleep with someone else, and essentially what happens is they show it him, and it's on a big TV and on his side of the beach, on his villa, and the men's villa, and then he realizes it's happening over the beach on the women's villa, and instead of sitting there and watching it, this man starts running down the beach literally. And it's lightning. I don't know, that lightning is a paid actor. It's lightning. The host is screaming, "Montoya, por favor, por favor," and he's just running. The cameraman is running behind him, and he just legs it there.
Really impressive, by the way.
His athleticism is crazy. And then, you know, she hears him screaming and shouting, and he's like, "How could you do this? You're gonna regret it, all of this." She comes running out mid intercourse.
Side note, the fact that it pans onto the other villa, and literally I had to rewind, I was like, what's going on? It's like there's people like naked in the hot tub. I'm like, what show?
They're all having a great time in his villa. His girl comes mid intercourse. First, she's screaming at him, and I'm like, oh my God, like, there's obviously no coming back from this for them. She's screaming at him. They're swearing at each other, whatever. He's crying, screaming, sliding down a wall, throwing up. And then she leaves. And then she runs onto the beach and then goes and hugs him. And she's like, "I'm sorry, I want to go with you. I want to go with you. I'm sorry." And I'm like, this is insane. That was the first clip that we saw. Then there was another clip that was before the girl having sex, which was her with the same guy, like, kissing and like, kind of touching each other in the pool. And Montoya rips his shirt open like Hulk. He kicks the iPad. And then people clocked that the reason the second clip was on the TV was so that he couldn't kick it, because in the first one, he kicked the iPad. It's so funny. He goes on the beach and then he puts his head in the water and brings it out. He's so... This guy deserves, like... multiple awards.
I don't care, it's not British TV. Give him a BAFTA, please.
He deserves... I love reality TV, and I'm going to go watch that show from
honestly,
the beginning.
And I've seen, like, I think some people have been tweeting, like, how are we as Brits meant to sit and enjoy
Love Island
All Stars after we've seen what we could have? Honestly, it was the most I could describe is that it's giving like Love Island like season 2, but on steroids.
On steroids, like Geordie Shore, Love Island season 2 on steroids.
Yeah.
First of all, Love Island is so washed now. That's just fact. Bring back Love Island when they could drink and smoke and fight and swear and just beat each other up. Love that.
And literally, like, have sex every night. And literally, they were like, showing our
TV. We have too much regulation on TV in UK TV now. We have to go to other countries to get the drama. And fair enough, they're providing.
Yeah, Ofcom, I know you're listening. Look, it would be in everyone's best interests if we just loosened
the
it up a
little ratings
would
be high. Because I can't remember the last time. I've been using Twitter for a very long time. And the platform has changed a lot. I remember back in the day, like, people would have joint discussions on things happening in real time. This was the first time in probably years where my entire timeline, people from every different country are talking about the same thing.
I just saw
what the internet was made for.
Yeah, exactly. I kept on seeing the words Love Island and Montoya. I was like, wait, what? Like, is there someone called Montoya on Love Island at the moment? And then looked into it, I was like, oh my gosh.
It was incredible.
I was just like, this clip just keeps getting better.
Better and better. Like, if someone said this is one of the clips that is funnier than the tweets about it, one of those rare moments, I was like, it's so true.
Cinematic.
Genuinely.
Do you reckon that lightning was real?
It has to be.
Do you not
think it was?
I'm just like, surely he would have got struck because he's running on a beach. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that would be really dangerous if it was.
Oh
don't know.
Oh dear. But it's the fact as well, they completely they're not meant to do that. Like, they're not meant to run to the upper aisle.
No, she was like, you're breaking the rules. She was running, screaming. She was like, you're breaking the rules. You're breaking the rules.
But my man was in crisis.
Oh, my God.
But wait, guys, I've seen the news. You know what? They're still together. To this day, they're still together.
How could... like
they are real lovers. That's how you call real love.
I already think, like, for example, couples that get together on Love Island, that there are some that are together, even some that are together now, that have had sex with other people on TV.
The show, I'm like, yeah, how? Like,
but this is going to be... you were literally a couple before the show started.
Yeah.
And then she's gone and, like...
the fact that you even went there... But then there's been debate because apparently she cheated first... so he cheated first.
But then apparently
it was just a lap dance. And then people were talking about the rate of exchange, where they're like, play stupid games with stupid prizes, about how when women, if you go low, women will take it to hell. Like,
I'm sorry, I can't get on board. I'm going to stand my male foot down here and say, no.
Oh, okay.
I stand with Montoya. Like,
I just find the whole thing extremely
comical.
I'm not
standing with an iPad kicking, shirt ripping, run on the beach man.
I'm here for it.
I love him.
Men
I
need
love
to
him.
Express their feelings more, Simran.
Not like that.
No, I really...
Poor women, right-hand women's wrongs.
For goodness sake.
I love him.
The point is, when is that coming to British TV? Because I want to watch it.
You know what? I am so sick of... I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket, but I am feeling you.
Can I pull you for a chat?
I know that you're not closed off with so-and-so, but I'm thinking, like, I really want to get to know you. Give it a rest. Literally. That's all it is. How does Love Island go on for so long when that is the only conversations they are having? You can even see it in their eyes that they're tired.
Honestly, I don't know how it's still going, to be honest.
You hear about how they say, like, we sleep at like 2 a.m. and we're up again at 5 to film. How are they filming so much?
I don't know.
There's nothing happens.
Montoya.
Love Island is so bad. Bring this, whatever it is,
Temptation Island.
Bring it. Without Ofcom.
I love it. I loved it. I'm going to watch the whole thing, guys.
Yeah, I want to watch it now. This would be great for my Spanish.
Yeah, literally.
No, people were like, before the... So I sent you the subtitled version, Simran, but people were like, before the subtitle version came out, it was just the original Spanish. Everyone was like, I don't speak a lick of Spanish, but I know exactly what's going on here.
Transcended language. Yeah.
Crazy.
A lot of swearing, I think. Oh dear. Right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in this week. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.